Hi, I'm Marcos Dinnerstein, editor of A Better Mousetrap. We've got a special guest with us today, so with no further ado, let's jump in. Mary J. Giafra, PhD, is a therapist with over 35 years of experience. She is a New York State licensed marriage and family therapist, a board-certified clinical specialist in psychiatric mental health, and a New York State registered professional nurse. She has taught in the US and abroad, including tenured positions at New York University and the College of Mount St. Vincent, and held leadership positions in professional societies. Mary is the author of the recently released book, Two by Two on the Arc, Five Secrets of a Great Relationship. It's so great to speak with you.
It's so nice to speak with you, Marcos.
How did you get interested in therapy?
Well, I've had a kind of a history. One interesting way that I was interested in couples is that when I was a kid, my mother would have this ladies' home journal delivered. And in the ladies' home journal each month, there was Dr. Paul Pompano. Can this marriage be saved? Was the name of the, and there were all these interesting stories about these marriages and the problems. And this Dr. Pompano seemed like a genius that all of a sudden, whatever magic he wrought, they seemed to do better. So that was early on. And then my mom was a psychiatric nurse and she worked in a psychiatric hospital. And it never appealed to me because I was always much more interested in healthy people. And I like to see the health in people rather than what's wrong. I'm more an optimist. I'm always looking for what's right to build on the right. So psychiatry in that way didn't appeal to me, or psychiatric nursing. So I also went to nursing school first, but I became a labor and delivery nurse because I liked health and people growing. And so, and at the time, I became extremely interested in what was going on with the couples and the couple relationship. I was fascinated, you know, in the labor room, the delivery room, before the babies. It just really intrigued me. And I was teaching students at the time, and I was so interested and wanted to teach them, but I needed to know more. So I went back to graduate school. And I also went to family therapy training and couples training, and have done many trainings since then. But that's really how it began. It began as a kid reading Ladies' Home Journal. And I knew I did like my mother's disease-oriented way. So I went to labor and delivery and I saw all the couples, and the dynamics intrigued me. And I've always been interested in couples and families. So that's how it happened.
Fantastic. So let's talk about your book.
Okay.
In your book, you use the five-letter acronym LOVER, L-O-V-E-R, to structure how we should think about creating a successful relationship.
Right.
Can you give us an overview of those topics?
Sure. In order to love, you need to have space. In order to be a person, you need to have space. I mean, you know, babies are born and they're not a lot of space and they come out into space. Couples too, we kind of can squeeze each other's space, but you have to have space for love. If you have too many preconceived expectations of what your partner should be like, or what you should be like, there's no space. There's all what happened in the past or what you expect. There's judgments and expectations and no space. So you have to leave space for love, space for you to know who you are and to let you be, and space for your partner, for them to just be who they are, not who they're supposed to be or you think you should be, just the truth. So you need to have space between you in order to really get close and to get together. You also need space inside yourself to know what your thoughts are, what your sensations are, what your feelings are, what your images are, what your behaviors are, just to know what's going inside me, just to get to know this is me, it's my world in here, and to be connected. And then space between my partner and I, it's kind of like, when you look at it, the world, we need space. We're surrounded by space, and yet we kind of get together and get fearful. And yet if we allowed more space, we would have options. We would have more area to breathe in our bodies. If we get nervous, we constrict and we close space. When we take a deep breath and we relax, we open space. So if you keep doing the same thing in the same stimulus response way, you constrict space and it's the same old, but excitement and creativity and passion and love needs space for something new and different to happen. So, and certainly people have talked a lot about space, mindfulness, people talk about, that's what mindfulness is, just to simply allow space and let the thoughts come, the feelings come, the sensations, don't react to them, just let it be. As the Beatles said, just let it be, let the feelings be, let the sensations be, the thoughts be. Acting out is different from experiencing space. So the really big thing is just deeply listening to yourself and to the other person and give them space to be who they are. If they're happy or sad, just give them space. If they think differently than you, give them space. Don't react, just give them space. And I promise you, if you give people space, something new and different will happen. But if you respond in the same old way, it will be the same old, same old.
Mm-hmm. I see. And what about the other letters in that acronym? Or are we already starting to cover some of those?
Well, the first thing is leave space for love. So you have to have space for you to be a separate person. They say two become one, but two only become one temporarily. We come together and we come apart. If two people give up their separateness to be one, that's not useful. That's not healthy. It doesn't help them to evolve as people. So you leave space between you. And there's a wonderful, wonderful expression or a poem, whatever the word we hear about leaving space for love. And it's just so useful. Cahil Gibran, in the book, The Prophet, wrote on marriage. And he said, "You shall be together when the white wings of death scatter your days, but let there be space in your togetherness, and let the winds of the heavens dance between you." And I think space, every religion has a Sabbath, a Sunday, a day of space where you can not multitask and keep doing what you're doing, but allow a little space. And it doesn't take a lot, even just have space to feel yourself walking, to just pay attention to brushing your teeth or drinking a glass of water. Just allow space to experience the moment. So space is really, really important. It's the key to creativity. If you don't have a space, an empty palette, you won't have any new paintings. So you have to keep creating new space for new paintings or new music or new relationships. Mm-hmm. So the first is leave space for love. The second is operate your brains to love. And now the title of the book is 2x2 in the Ark. And it's a metaphor from the idea of the Bible, where in the Tower of Babel, the people couldn't communicate. And so then God said, okay, Noah and your wife, you create an ark and go off there, but with two of every animal, two. And now what I was saying is, humans with their human brain didn't do a very good job communicating. So the animals were there to teach us something. And the truth is, based on evolution, we learn that we all have a triune brain. On top is that very smart executive human brain. And the language of that brain is reason. It's kind of a little like a computer, you know, very reasonable and no emotions, no, it's just reason. And then we have a mammalian brain, which is the limbic system. And it's kind of, you know, like the dogs and cats, we kind of, that's where we attach and hug and like to be together and get frightened when we're abandoned, because in the wild, it would be scary if we were abandoned. Also, it's warm, so we have to learn how to operate our smart human brain, and the language is reason. And the language of the mammalian brain or the limbic system is emotion. So how do we talk about our emotions? And we need to know that the human brain obeys the laws of logic. It's very orderly. The mammalian brain, the emotional brain, is like the weather. You can have a tornado today and a sunny day tomorrow. It doesn't obey the laws of logic. So we can control our thoughts. We can't control our emotions, but we can't control our behaviors. So it's really important to know that I can feel something, but I don't have to act it out. I can feel angry and feel very angry, but if I act it out, I violate your space. I invade myself into your space. If I keep it in my own space, it's fine. So it's leave space for love, operate your brains, and this human brain, the mammalian brain, and then the reptilian brain or the lizard brain, which is our brainstem, and that's the survival brain. If an animal's out in the wild and another one comes after you, you either fight back or you flee. And we have that same survival brain that we get scared and we fight or we flee or we freeze. And people have that and they go through life with that and need to learn how to uncouple all that, or it will really upset relationships. So that's the second one, operate your brains to love. And the third one is view your conditioning with love. We're all conditioned. We're conditioned by our culture, by our gender, by our education, by our ethnicity, our religion, our intergeneration, our families. We don't know we're conditioned, but we're very, very conditioned. We just respond automatically. Each experience is very often not new, creative, and different. It's just the same old, you do this and I do that. You say this and I say that. It's kind of like driving a car. It's creative and exciting in the beginning, but then you just do it on automatic. And in the best of all worlds, if we had space for every experience to be new and different, we'd have a dynamic, delightful, exciting relationship in life. But, you know, we kind of have to do things, certain things we do automatically. It's just if you take 5 minutes in a day or 2 minutes in a day to just stop the multitasking and say, what am I feeling? Just I'll take 3 steps and feel what it feels like. Just allow space. If a partner is annoyed or angry, rather than reacting in the usual way, leave space, take a breath, go into your own space and let them respond however they respond. Something new and different will happen. Mm-hmm. So it's leave space for love, operate your bridge to love, view your conditioning with love. And what we do in relationships is either the exact same as our parents or the complete opposite very often until we learn differently. So, you know, that's where you learn to be a mother, father, husband, wife, man, woman, you know, it may not be what we believe or what we want, but we need space to know what we're doing and what our values really are to make changes. So then you begin to emerge free to love. Once you know how to create space to contain yourself and all your experiences, space for the other, and instead of judging them or finding fault with them or trying to control them, just listen to them and hear. It makes all the difference in the world because they feel seen and heard and validated and can be creative in how they respond rather than you know, the old way of feeling that they have to protect or defend against you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the last was route and navigate stormy seas. Well, stormy seas are the nature of the game. Life is filled with stormy seas. And it's just, so when things are going well, it's often easier, but then things don't go so well. And that's when you really have to leave space, listen deeply, and don't use your automatic reactivity, but rather allow space for something new and creative and then respond rather than reacting. And you know, there are times when children are born and so on, it gets more complex, people are sick, and all of these are stormy seas that we can all handle well if we have the skills. And the book is really about giving people the skills to really have a rich relationship and not have to give up yourself as an individual to fit in or to be what someone else thinks you should be, but they can both be separate people and yet love each other and be together and have a deep intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. That's a great structure within which to look at this. In speaking with you earlier, I was originally interested in how you use the term space and the term container. I think you've pretty well answered the question of space. But we haven't touched on the idea of a container Are containers, as you see them, inherently good, bad, or neutral?
I would say neutral. I mean, I think everything is relatively good, bad, or neutral unless we put some judgment on or some value. I mean, like, you know, hurting people is not, but hurting people is violating their space. Like if you yell at somebody, you're invading their space. If you criticize somebody, you're invading their space. If you find fault, or you're invading their space. So that's always an invasion. Everyone needs a safe container inside that I can be in my safe space and you can be in yours, and you won't invade my safe container, that I feel safe. And you need permission to enter my space. No one has the right to enter another space without permission. Our body is a container. And it contains all our emotions, all our feelings, all our thoughts, all our sensations. We could keep them all inside our own individual container, or we can ask permission to, you know, share them into another person's space. But they need to, for instance, if I want to share something and the other person is not interested or shuts down or invalidates me, then their container is closed to me. So I can do it from natal doomsday and they just won't let it in. And so there's always the separateness, and there's always the respect for your own space and the respect for the other space. No one really has a right to invade another space without permission. And we all have a right to containers. If you didn't have a container, you'd kind of be all over the place. You wouldn't know what you thought or what you felt or who another person was, or maybe in your mind they were who you think they are, but that's your container, that's not theirs.
Another way to say it might be containers are those characteristics that maybe define who you are or what you're feeling at a given time.
Right, and they're held in the body, though, when the body is a container. Do you know what I mean? And you can call a container thoughts. So the container for what I'm thinking is called thoughts. The container for what I'm sensing are called sensations. The container for what I'm feeling are called feelings or emotions. I can be imaging something, and the container, I can call them images. These are my images. Yeah. Rather than you have a thought and you call it a feeling, like I feel you should go to the store. Well, that's not a feeling, that's a thought. You know, it's pretending it's a feeling, but it's really a thought with the word feeling in front of it.
Yeah.
You know, I think you should go to the store. I would like you to go to the store. It would make me happy if you went to the store. Then I'm sharing my own feeling. But to say, I feel you should do something is really not a feeling. It's a judgment. It's not a feeling. The feeling is I feel sad, I feel happy, I feel pleased. Thought is different. So we need to uncouple. A lot of people mix up thoughts, feelings, and sensations. And so you don't have accurate data to have relationships or to say what you really feel or to be who you are. And the larger your container is, the more aware you are of your own thoughts, your own sensations, your own feelings, your own values. And you give the other person space for their container to be them, with their thoughts and their feelings. And you could love somebody and they have entirely different thoughts, entirely different feelings, because they're separate from you. Their bodies are separate containers. So it's like, really, it's so important to respect other people's containers. You know, it's just like other people's space, your own too. To surrender your own and to let people invade your space is not okay, or your container.
Right. Asking for conflict, trouble, for unhappiness.
Exactly.
Jumping to something completely different. We've been in lockdown essentially for a year. How has the pandemic affected the relationships of couples that you've been seeing? For many of us couples, we're both isolated and in unusually close contact with our partners.
Right. You know, I was just thinking when you said that of containers again, because now people go to work and they go in the train or their car. The car is a container, the train is a container, their office is a container, and the same thing with their partner. And now they're all home, and they're in none of these separate containers. We're all in one another's space constantly. And so it's really important to create some containers that I can have my own separate space. You know, I really never thought about it, but as you said it, I said, gee, we have so many containers. You know, you're a different person in each of these containers, right? I mean, it's kind of interesting. But when you're home, you don't have that. It's just constant, ongoing interaction. And some people, it works beautifully. Like people who have been so busy in all these other containers that they haven't spent a lot of time with each other may just be feeling open enough and secure enough to be curious about their partner. And really, love could develop from that. You know what I mean? That, well, who are you? What do you like? What's going on? That they have this space to be together and space to be with themselves. So many people have said that to me, that they don't look forward to work starting because having space to be talking with a partner, to have breakfast, to sit down and have a cup of tea, to take a walk, sometimes play golf or something in the middle of the day, to be with children. For some people, that's really wonderful. They have been so multitasking and so constricted, and now they feel that they have more space. But the problem comes up with the containers because people have lost a lot of the containers that they had in their normal day-to-day life. And they can get into one another's space and tell people to do things again, and that can cause a lot of problems. And children, it's particularly hard for, you know, adolescents and young people because they're trying to differentiate from their parents. They're trying to pull away and to define them and who their container differently, and their space is different, so they can feel invaded. So there are two outcomes I've seen. Some couples have, for the first time, gotten really closer together and gotten to know each other. They were just so busy out there that they never had time for each other. And that's been really effective. But for many couples, it's been a real problem. Even our police chief called the other day. He keeps us up to date on COVID every now and again. And he said he's having a lot of mental health calls these days because people are so in each other's space that they get reactive to each other. And one of the things I talk about in the book is if your partner is getting reactive and angry, and if you can stay calm and you can stay in your own calm space and don't react to him or her, that's great. But if we're human and when he's doing that or she's doing that, it triggers you. You need to get space. You need to say, time out. I'm going to have a cup of tea, take a walk, go to the bathroom. We'll come back in 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes. But to keep talking about it and going on about something when you're both getting revved up is a recipe for disaster. So rule number one is if another person is getting very activated, child, man, woman, or beast, getting activated, if you can stay calm, you can stay with them. But if you start getting, your pulse gets faster, you start revving up, you need to create space between you because you're fusing, you're both getting into each other's space and it's not a good outcome. So that's the thing is that, you know, the interesting thing is there's only one person in the whole, maybe young children, but there's one person in the world we can change ourselves. We really can't change other people. They can pretend we're changing us, but it's not true. I mean, unless they choose to. So give people space to be who they are. Tell them what you need. Tell them what you would like and prefer, but give them space to respond however they respond. Space is the key in this COVID time because the containers are gone. People tend to be invading one another's space, and you just have to respect your own space first. I can remember one day, it was really cute. I'd be working late with a couple, and I would come in and I had a home office in those days. And my husband would be sitting there and he'd want to talk. And this is not often, but I can remember one night in particular. And I said, Bob, I really can't talk. I am so up to here with talking and I'm just exhausted. And he was fine. He just was sweet as anything. He said, no problem. And it's kind of when you're stressed as well that you really need people to respect your space and not to hassle you. You know what I mean? If somebody is stressed or overloaded, just give them space. Give them space. You know, a couple would say their husband will come home and he's in a bad mood. And so, you know, the partner would try to be nice and to make them feel better. And they would get worse and worse and get annoyed at the partner. Well, what was that about? Well, what it was about is simply that they leave them alone and they just need space to process what happened to them that day. So we really have to respect other people's our own space and other people's space. Space is the key to creativity, to love, to everything.
So when couples are in crisis, of course, they should seek a qualified therapist if they can.
Absolutely.
But for those who are merely struggling,
Yeah, which is all. Anyone who tells you they don't ever struggle, then you wonder if there's much growing going on, because growth comes from doing things differently and evolving. And so, you know, like labor and delivery is, it's work. They talk about it as work. Well, relationships can be work too. It's kind of like a business. If you say, if I meet the right person, I'll live happily ever after. Well, that's the kiss of death. I mean, because we're supposed to evolve and grow. And if we don't ever change is a real serious problem. So we may have loved the person we first married, but this new person may be, you know, hard to get to know. And we need space to see our reaction and space for them to evolve and grow. It's an ongoing journey. It's not a, if you get the right one, you live happily ever after. That's just not true. It's kind of an illusion maybe, or a delusion, but it's not true. I mean, the only way you can keep from growing is to drink. I mean, regularly take drugs, freeze, something like that can, or some kind of addiction to just, it sort of tries to stop time. Time keeps happening, but it's trying to keep things the way they are. But if we're growing human beings, we're ideally always changing. They may like to change at a given time, and we're not happy because we liked it the way it was before. Then we have to go along. And then they may change, and we may not like it. Then we grow along. And I think that relationships are the best way to evolve and grow as a human being, because you can be who you want to be in other relationships. You can put your image out there. You can be, just let so much of you show and be who you want to be. But in an intimate relationship like marriage, you go deeper. You go into all, you know, the family conditioning, and inside we all have a little kid, you know, a little vulnerable kid, a little angry kid, and maybe a judgmental parent. And so you can keep that hidden from other people, but it pops out in intimate relationships.
Yeah, sure it does. Well, this has been great. And we could absolutely plumb the depths for hours, I'm sure.
That's why the book was really, it's my gift. No one has ever, I mean, schools don't teach you how to have relationships. No. You learn at home, whatever you learn at home, but you all learn the productive parts of it and the effective, but you also learn the not so effective parts. And your partner might be from a different culture, a different family, and he thinks his way is right. And the other person thinks their way is right. And they're just different. And you don't even know that it's different. You just assume all couples do that, all parents do that, but it's not, it's only yours. So romantic novels and romantic movies are wonderful and lovely, and falling in love is great. But, you know, it's kind of like a business. If you don't pay attention to it and work on it, it'll go down the tubes. Well, if once you have a partner, then you say, oh, now that's taken care of, I'll handle my job and do that and the kids, your relationship will go down the tubes. Whatever you invest in, you get a return on your investment.
Yes. So listeners, you should get your copy, 2x2 on the ARC, 5 Secrets of a Great Relationship. That's written the number 2x2 on the ARC, 5 Secrets of a Great Relationship. Mary Jeffra, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you so much, Marcos. Thank you. I appreciate it. And I hope people benefit a great deal.
I'm sure they will.